Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
Hear it from the doctor with expert guests from the American Academy of Pediatrics. It's Healthy Children. Now, our favorite mom, Melanie Cole, MS.
When you have a child that isn't feeling well or is in pain, right away you're going to run to your local pharmacy and look at all of those over-the-counter medications to see if there's something you can do to help them. But it can be confusing. You're not sure whether you should be giving your child something for a fever or whether you should be alternating Tylenol and Motrin or which one is better. And sometimes it can just absolutely be dizzying. And my guest to clear some of this up for us today is a fan favorite here on Healthy Children, Dr. Corinne Cross. She's a pediatrician and spokesman for the American Academy of Pediatrics. Dr. Cross, over-the-counter medications can be so confusing for parents. I'd like to start with the fever medication because that seems to be the most common. Do we try and get rid of the fever? And if the first thing we try doesn't work, what about that alternating thing? Tell us about Tylenol versus Motrin and Advil, ibuprofen versus acetaminophen.
So first of all, parents tend to worry so much about fevers when in reality, they're not the biggest deal. So if you don't have a really high fever, so we're talking, you know, something over 101.5, you don't really need to treat that, right? You can have a little bit of a higher temperature when you're sick, and a little bit of that is, you know, that's your body. It's fighting the infection. So that's one of the ways that it has to fight the infection. So if it's not bothering the kid, having a temperature of 99, 100, even 101, you really don't have to worry about that unless your child's uncomfortable. Once your child's uncomfortable or once you're uncomfortable with the temperature that your child's body has reached, then you want to start treating it. So you have two different types of medication. You have acetaminophen, which is the active ingredient in Tylenol, and you have ibuprofen, which is the active ingredient in Motrin and Advil. So you want to make sure if you're not sure what you have or if you want to compare prices at the drugstore, that you look at the bottle and you look for your active ingredient. It's always going to have, if it's a fever medication, one of those two things. Now, the other fever medication we have is aspirin, and that we never use for children. So the two things you have to choose from, the brand names are basically your Tylenol, and on the other side, your Motrin and Advil, which are the same thing. So Advil works great for fevers. Motrin or ibuprofen works better for both fevers and any sort of pain or swelling. So if you've got, you know, a headache, if you've got, you know, muscle pains, if you've got some swelling because you, like, hit your leg and you're in pain, you want to be taking ibuprofen. That's the better medication for that. But if you're just trying to bring down a fever, either is great. So one is dosed every 4 to 6 hours. One is dosed every 6 to 8 hours, which is how you get into this alternating system, right? So you give maybe your acetaminophen, your Tylenol, and you say, oh my gosh, you know, 2 hours later, the fever's up, but I can't give the Tylenol again until 4 hours or 4 to 6 hours. So instead, I'm going to switch to a different active ingredient, ibuprofen, right? And so you give your Motrin or your Advil, and then that one you give every 8 hours. What I say to parents is, if you're going to start doing that, you have to write it down. You always think you're going to remember, and nobody remembers. And, you know, you have a parent, a grandparent, a father, a mother, everybody's trying to do it, and you want to make sure you're not overdosing. So if you are going to start alternating medications, or if you just have multiple caregivers, or you're just busy, write down when you're giving your kid the medicine, because it makes it easier. I also think if you're going to give it in the middle of the night, if you think, okay, if I wake up in the middle of the night, I'm going to give this to them, have it poured out the appropriate amount before you go to bed, because you're less likely to make a mistake then, and then you can just carry it into their bedroom and give it to them if they wake up with a fever.
Such a good idea to write it down, because I remember, Dr. Cross, when my kids were little, that we would pre-pour out the Tylenol into the little liquid cup and set it out in case one of us woke up in the middle of the night. But I do remember a few times when we're like, did you give it to her? You know, or I already gave her a dose. And, you know, going back and forth like that is pretty scary for parents. So writing it down, so important. Knowing the difference between the two, again, so important. Now the kid has a fever, some aches and pains. You've given your Motrin, but they're also stuffed up like crazy, or they're coughing. What then? Because now we hear that you're not really supposed to be giving cough medicines anymore, or that you have to be careful with some of these decongestant. So speak about those.
Right. So then you have, a lot of times then you go back to the pharmacy and you get these multi-symptom medications. And the issue with the multi-symptom medications is a lot of times they also have the fever medications in them, or they have, you know, for aches and pain. So they're going to have your ibuprofen already in them. So if you're going to start giving your child more than one medication, you absolutely need to look at the active ingredients and make sure that you're not doubling up. Even doubling up on something like acetaminophen, which is Tylenol, can be very dangerous, right? Tylenol is a safe medication, how we use it. But if you take too much, it's definitely not okay, right? These things can have problems with your liver and whatnot. So you really have to make sure that you're looking at your active ingredients, right? So we do not recommend, because it hasn't been tested, to give cold medications to children less than 4 years of age, right? It's not just that it hasn't been tested, it's been shown to be detrimental, right? So some of these medications, the way that they work is they sort of depress your breathing. They, you know, this way you're not coughing so much or whatnot. You want to make sure that what you're giving is appropriate for the age of the child, right? So less than 4 years old, absolutely, we do not recommend it. Over four, like the 4 to 8 range, again, it's not very effective, so you feel as if you're doing something by giving them the medication, but it's usually not really effective. Your kid's just getting better because time is passing. Things that are effective are, and strangely enough, they did a test where they did like Robitussin versus honey, and honey, like, you know, just a spoonful of honey, was just as effective as a cough suppressant as the Robitussin. So as long as your child's a year of age or older, right, we don't give honey to babies, but as long as they're a year of age or older, it's much easier to give them a spoonful of Robitussin, a spoonful of honey than a spoonful of Robitussin when they're coughing, and there's no real side effects. So there are things that you can do, but I usually shy away from the multi-drug medications because it's really easy to give too much, and it's also they're not really very effective. So the honey, steaming them so that they can loosen up all of that, making sure they're properly blowing their nose, because we all know kids don't really blow it, using the bulb suction when you need to when the kids are little.
That's pleasant for parents.
Making sure they're getting enough sleep. Yes. Well, you know, it's pleasant it's pleasant when they can breathe better, right?
It is.
It's not that bad a thing.
And so what about things like the saline? Because, you know, Afrin, but that's a harsh decongestant, and you know that just wow, you get that stuff in there, antihistamine, and it's harsh up there. So saline, does that help? Because a lot of times the biggest problem is they can't breathe, and then they're going to sleep and they're
right.
Like their nose is so stuffed up that they just can't even take a breath.
Right. So the saline can loosen that up. I also say putting them in a shower that's really steamy helps, or doing that old-fashioned thing where you boil the pot of water, you put their head over it, you put a towel. Now you have to make sure they're not burning themselves, right? You have to take it off the stove and, you know, really monitor this. But breathing in that steam really opens that up, and then you just try to get them to blow. Now the saline can loosen it up. The Afrin is, you know, it's effective as a decongestant, but you have to be very careful, because if you use it for more than 2 to 3 days, all of a sudden you get this rebound effect where you're having more swelling and it's not effective,
yeah,
right?
It's terrible.
So you have to make sure that if you're using this, you're using it appropriately. And you really don't want to be giving your kids lots of medications without talking to your pediatrician. So Tylenol, Motrin, absolutely okay. Once you're getting into the decongestants and stuff, I would definitely check with your pediatrician to make sure it's okay, right? I love the Sudafed for older children. That can be helpful. That can help them get back to school. But I like the parents to check with me and just say, hey, this is where I'm at. What do you think? Because I don't want them walking around with a sinus infection. If this has been going on for forever, you want them to come in and see you, because the over-the-counter might just not be sufficient, and they might be masking their symptoms. So parents just have to be wary of that. You don't want to just keep giving these things for more than a few days, because if it's going on for more than a few days, they probably do need to check in with a doctor.
And humidifiers can help, too, in the rooms. And I even like the
menthol
rubs, because sometimes you put a little under their nose, you put a little on their chest, and I really do feel that those help. And, you know, so there are certainly other things, and like the honey, as you said. Now, a lot of kids develop these little rashes, whether it's eczema or some kind of a mild skin rash, and we go to the cortisone cream. Now, is this okay? Mm-hmm. Because it still is hydrocortisone. Do we mix it with a little Aquaphor to dull it down a little bit? Tell us about the creams.
So the hydro- cortisone that's over-the-counter isn't that strong. So if you have a little bit of eczema or something along these lines, like an insect bite, a little bit of poison ivy, that's absolutely fine. You can put that on. Sometimes parents can't tell the difference between, you know, eczema and a fungal infection, right? So kids also get, you know, athlete's foot, or they get ringworm, which is just the same fungus but on your skin, right? So they can get this, and it's, you know, peely, and it can look confusing, right? So if you're not sure and you're treating a fungus with hydrocortisone, it's not going to get better. In fact, it's going to get worse. And, you know, that's when you need to have, like, the Lotrimin or the Lamisil put on there. So, you know, it's not always that easy to tell what's going on, but if you're certain you know what's going on and hydrocortisone is the right thing to treat it, such as poison ivy, eczema, you know, a little bit of an insect bite, something like that, then that's fine. But if you're not sure what the rash is, you might be better off finding out before you treat it with hydrocortisone and make it worse and then have to go back and treat it with an antifungal.
This time of year, it's hard to avoid getting sick, whether it's a common cold or the stomach bug. It's crucial to stay well hydrated. Hydrolyte is a great-tasting clinical hydration product that contains the correct balance of sodium, glucose, and water to rapidly replace fluids and electrolytes. Hydrolyte comes in great flavors like orange, berry, lemonade, and is available as a premixed drink, a powder, or effervescent tablets that you can simply drop into a glass or a bottle of water. Compared to sports drinks, Hydrolyte delivers up to 4 times the electrolytes with 75% less sugar. Hydrolyte solutions are appropriate for all ages, and each bottle or package includes easy-to-follow dosing instructions. You can find Hydrolyte in the digestive aisle at Rite Aid or online at Amazon.com. Visit Hydrolyte.com/podcasts to save 30% on Amazon with promo code HydraKid. That's Hydrolyte.com/podcasts to save 30% on Amazon with promo code HydraKid. And before we talk about some adult medications, then I want to take a minute to talk about stomach medication. Stomach aches are so common, Dr. Cross, in children. And I remember that when my child was a baby, I gave them Little Tummies, which was a gas bubble breaker upper thing. But it was sort of an all natural, and I don't know that it really worked. And then I got worried that I shouldn't be giving them this Little Tummies. And I mean, but it seemed to help with the bubbles that made them so uncomfortable. What can we do for the little babies and for the, you know, a bit older children when they start to get these stomach aches?
Yeah, so stomach aches, a lot of times, it depends on the age of the child. So if they're a baby and you think that your child is having stomach pains, that's something that you probably should talk to your pediatrician about, because as much as some kids are just gassy, other kids have other things going on. So for babies, we want to try to feed them slower, burp them more. The Little Tummies is fine. I'm with you. I'm not sure it does much. You know, sometimes we put infants on gas medications, but a lot of times if they're having issues, we want to see them to make sure that all their insides are working correctly. So if we're talking about an infant, they definitely need to check in with their doctor. Older kids, it seems hard to believe, but majority of, if they're not sick, if they're not having vomiting and diarrhea, right, if they're just having these occasional tummy pains, it's usually one of two things. It's either stress or it's constipation, right? Those two things are what kids often come in with when they say that their stomach hurts. So you might think, huh, but they say they go to the bathroom all the time. You need to ask them, are they straining? Do they have to push? Does it hurt sometimes when they poo? Is it hard? Because, you know, after a while, you're not actually in there when your kid's going to the bathroom. You don't know these things. You think that they're having normal bowel movements, and they're not. And more likely than not, that's what's going on. I love Miralax for this. It's tasteless, it's odorless, it's a powder, you can mix it into anything. And usually, you know, it can get them to start going and having nice, normal stools. And you just have to make sure when you're treating constipation, you treat it a little bit more than a few days after they're normal. You have to keep treating them so that their bowels have a chance to really, like, shrink back to that normal size, and they don't just have this cyclical constipation. So a lot of times, you know, you have to get to the root of what's going on. But, you know, pediatricians, if you call them and you say this is what's going on, they may tell you to give your child a Tums, or they may tell you to, you know, try the Miralax. But again, there's so many different reasons that kids can have stomach pains that if they're not having the vomiting and diarrhea so that we know that they're sick, a lot of times we want to check them out and just make sure everything's okay. If you know your kid's constipated, though, you can go ahead with a constipation medication and then just check in with your doctor if that doesn't work.
And now safe storage. This is, you know, with the opioid epidemic and people on pain medication and adults with their blood pressure medication and diabetes medication, and there's so many medications. So if we have those in our house, how do you store them? I mean, little kids get curious. Sometimes they can even open up some of these things. So how do we store them safely so that we know, and how can we keep track to make sure that our teens aren't getting into them? Because they can open up those, you know, safety lock ones and make sure, do we keep track? Do we count the pills? Speak about safe storage.
So you want to think when you're storing your medications, not just about the medicine in, you know, what's hopefully, you know, a child-resistant package, but also what you take out and you put in a pill box or you put in your purse in a little pill case. You want to make sure you're thinking about all the places that you have pills, whether you keep some in your car, whatever it is. You want to think about all those locations. And it depends, what you do depends on the age of your child, right? When your children are little, putting them up high where they can't get to, putting them in a box, up on a shelf, you know, that might be sufficient, right? And you want to make sure that you're not just doing this for your heart medication, your blood pressure medication, but also for your Tylenol, right? Like I said before, acetaminophen is a very dangerous medication if taken in massive quantities. So you want to make sure that you're really taking all of that medication and putting it out of reach of a child and making sure if you have a pill box, you're not leaving it out on the counter, but again, putting it up high. As your children get older, right, there's other medications that sometimes, unfortunately, older kids like to get into, whether it's ADHD medications, opiates, muscle relaxers. There's a lot of things that, you know, can be a problem. This is when I really suggest getting some sort of tackle box, putting those medications in there, making sure you're keeping track of how many pills you have, and then locking that up. Because honestly, that's the only way you can make sure that kids aren't getting into it. You think that you're putting it someplace where they don't know where it is, or you're just keeping track. A lot of times kids know, you know, they know how to get into that. And so you want to make sure if it's something you use daily and you're going to check every day, you know, a pill you take every day, then maybe writing it down and making sure you have the right amount every day is sufficient. But if it's something that you, you know, have and you maybe take once every couple months, you're not going to notice pills are missing until it's too late. So you want to make sure that you're putting those someplace where they're just not tempting.
Very smart. Wrap this up for us, Dr. Cross. Medication 101 for parents with little kids, with teenagers. Really what you want people to understand about the safety of medications they may or may not be giving their kids.
I would say that always look at the active ingredients. Even if you think you know what you're giving, make sure you're not giving too much and make sure you're not get double dosing with two different medications. I would say always write things down, because when you've got a sick kid, we're all extra busy, and it's when you lose track. And if you have any questions about whether you're giving the right dose or not, check with your pediatrician. Also, if you're giving medications for more than a couple of days, that's a good time to check in and make sure that something more serious isn't going on or that you're actually doing it correctly. A lot of times these cold medicines, they make us feel better because we're doing stuff, but they're not actually helping. So shy away from giving medication just as a placebo effect or just to make you feel better. Really, a lot of times supportive care is the best thing we can do. Then when you get to the older kids, we have to make sure that we're storing this in a way that isn't tempting to kids. And for the younger kids, we have to make sure we're storing all of our medications, whether they're in bottles or not, away from them. And this goes for things like medicinal marijuana, things that can be confused for food. You know, all these things we have to think about when we have kids. And then the last thing I'd like to say as we wrap this up is when you're done with a medicine and you don't need it anymore, dispose of it safely. That doesn't necessarily mean throwing it in the trash or flushing it down the toilet. There's lots of disposal kiosks at pharmacies, at Walgreens. You can get bags from your pharmacist. If you have extra opiates or things of that nature and you need to dispose of them, go to the pharmacy with your bottles. They can often help you to dispose of that safely so it's not going back into our drinking water and our groundwater and everything else.
Very good advice, and so smart to bring it to your pharmacist because they can dispose of these things properly. And great advice about medication safety. As parents, that's what we, you know, we worry about our kids when they're sick, when they're not feeling well, and we look right away to the medicine cabinet to see what it is that we can do. But there are other ways to help your children. And if you're unsure, always contact your pediatrician. They will know. They know your child, and they will know best way to help you and give you the greatest advice. You're listening to Healthy Children, and our expert guests are provided by the American Academy of Pediatrics in association with their consumer website, healthychildren.org. This is Melanie Cole for Radio MD. Thanks so much for listening, and stay well.